Hello and welcome to the Tech Reformation Podcast, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Craig.
And this is Tank.
Yay, Tank's back. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm back and sent the other two running.
Yeah, the other.
Hang out with me.
I don't think that's really what it was, but Ben and Derek are both unable to make it this week, which is a bit sad, but super awesome that Tank's able to be here. Tell us what's been going on with you, Tank. You've been away for quite a few weeks now.
Yep, so I took a week vacation to go from Oklahoma to Richmond, which is where Richmond, Virginia, which is where the training for Michelle's and my trip is at. So we're going to Japan for 2 years, and before that we're taking a 2-month training. So we are just finishing up with week 2 of the training, and we have 7 weeks left before we head over to Japan.
Wow. And what would you say has been the best thing about the training so far?
I'd say two things. Oh, man, three things.
But that's okay.
Since you said the best, I might have to cut those out. just the real quick, two quick brief ones, and then one that's really been rocking my world a bit. The first one is just the company of like-minded Christians that we're living with. There's 100 of us here, and we eat all our meals together and do small group together and go through training together, and just being around fellow believers that are all wanting to go overseas all the time has been fantastic. Secondly, like all of my time is either spent learning, reading the Bible, praying, spent with other believers. And so there's just a lot more time to build really good habits of spiritual disciplines before we go. And just really enjoyed the extra time just spent with Jesus. And that's that's been really good. And then the third thing has been just the teaching that we've had. And I'd say the most difficult teaching is just the emphasis on evangelism. And not evangelism where you make a friend and wait like 3 months and then share the gospel with them once and then wait like 5 more months and share the gospel with them. But like we're expected to share the gospel 3 times a week here, like go out and share the gospel 3 times a week. And it's just an expectation of everywhere we go in our lives, we should be sharing the gospel with those people we run into. Just kind of cold turkey, broad seed sowing, because I mean, we believe in a God that is constantly drawing people to himself. And so why wouldn't we may just be coming on the road, and we should expect, like Jesus constantly says, that I am the Lord of the harvest, and that the harvest is plentiful. And you say there's 4 more months until harvest, but I say it's here now. Like all those references, we should be expecting that Jesus is working in people's lives, and that when we come across, and that he's going to bring them into our paths, and when we share the gospel, we'll see salvation. So that's been like what they've been stuffing down our throats this past week, is to, like one guy was consistently saying, by your third meeting or by your third conversation, the people should know the gospel. Like, because just why not? Like you're a Christian. you've hung out, you've had 3 conversations by the third one. You should be telling them what you're about and ask them if they'll hear the message and then share it.
So, yeah.
Coming from a place of being too afraid to share the gospel consistently, especially with strangers, it's been a good lesson. And Michelle and I are going to go out tomorrow to a park and try to share the gospel a few times. Tomorrow being Saturday, so Michelle and I went to the park yesterday, but I can't tell you how it went yet.
Cool. But, no, that's really good. That it sounds really challenging, but super worthwhile as well. It's in terms of, you know, actually making a commitment like that and saying we're going to do it this regularly for these reasons, and those reasons are obviously biblical reasons. I think so many Christians probably shy away because of the fact that they're worried about coming across as just the weird out there Christian who's really, really intense or really outspoken and in your face with what they believe, because our society is so reserved on personal matters like that. But I think that's, you're right, that is what we're called to do. We are called to share the message of the gospel, and to shy away from that for prideful reasons seems definitely the wrong way to be going about it.
Yeah, and that's I guess one of the things they mentioned is those kind of people that are like that, you just like, well, those aren't the people God's drawing. I think especially for us who are believe that God has elected those to come to know him, that should be almost an easy teaching to swallow, you know, that
yeah.
Like, oh, well, they're upset at us. We just move on and find the person that God is drawing and not get beat up by it. So, yeah, it's been a very good teaching. As one other thing, just to comment on that, is a quote that's kind of stuck with me, is those who are regularly sharing the gospel are going to see much more fruit than those who are trying to make it complicated. It's like trying to figure out the best method and the best trick and then never do it.
Any fruit.
And that's, I mean, that's me in a nutshell, is always trying to think up when's the best time and when's the best way. And really the best way is just pray, fast, and go do it. So.
Yep. Pray, comma, fast, or pray fast?
Pray, comma, fast.
Okay, cool. Glad we clarified that. Well, we're glad you're back. I'm glad you're back. The other two are glad you're back too, but they're just not here to say it. So I'm pretty sure I can say it on their behalf. It should be a good episode this week. I'm looking forward to having a chat. And I guess we'll get into the news.
Yep, I'm ready.
And that brings us into Tech You Should Know, the part of the show where we bring you 7 tech news stories from throughout the past week that we feel are worth your consideration. Firstly, Uber has given up the ride-sharing race in China. Uber has made a deal to merge with Didi Chuxing, giving Uber a $7 billion stake in Didi, and Didi will be investing in Uber at a valuation of almost $70 billion. If that's confusing, that's okay, it is. Uber is essentially letting go of its branch in China because it knows when to fold them, and in return, Didi is investing in Uber as a company. Everyone owns everyone.
So it's like ride-sharing and now company-sharing.
Kind of, except they're just buying out whole companies with huge stacks of money. But, wow, yeah, that's pretty crazy. And in news of companies buying companies, Tesla will be officially buying SolarCity for $2.6 billion. Of course, Elon Musk has laid out that this was a goal of his in a blog post we covered a couple of weeks ago, but Tesla provides more reasons in the official blog post. We expect to save customers money by lowering hardware costs, reducing installation costs, improving our manufacturing efficiency, and reducing our customer acquisition costs. We will also be able to leverage Tesla's 190-store retail network and international presence to extend our combined reach. Samsung has announced the new Galaxy Note 7, and it's eye-popping. It's got all the typical features of a Galaxy Note, a big display, water resistance, stylus support, but has now also debuted an iris scanner. It's not required by any means, as it still has a fingerprint sensor, but if you're really concerned about your privacy, you can now do biometric authentication to the max. Awesome. Wow. Is that a good thing? You think that's a good thing?
I think it's a good thing. The further they get away from passwords, the better.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, as long as they're working on technology to do that, I'm happy.
Yeah. Would you go fingerprint over iris, or do you think iris is potentially better?
I have no idea. I don't have a phone that can do either, so I'm not.
What do they scan your iris with? Is it infrared or something? Like, what are they? How does that even work?
I don't know. Maybe they send a little probe up there and go dig in your iris.
I'm sure
juices out, scan the DNA.
I'm sure one of our listeners will probably know and tell us. They'll be like, duh, they've been doing that for years. Anyway, it's pretty cool that they're able to do that on something as small as a phone. Next up, the copying of features from Snapchat appears to be far from over, as Instagram has just plucked the Stories feature from Snapchat. Stories is a feature that allows users to share videos or pictures with their followers for 24 hours before they disappear forever. Instagram wasn't even apologetic about the blatant ripoff, with product VP Kevin Vile comparing the idea of the story feature to the now universality of the hashtag, which debuted at least in the popular eye on Twitter. Now, I've been known for my comments on this podcast about Snapchat, so I'm not going to say anything about Snapchat, other than to say I'm not a huge fan of the stories feature on Instagram. I don't think Instagram needs the stories feature, and I won't be using it. Nice. Thus endeth my discussion of that news topic. Niantic is, or Niantic, if you want to, depending on how you pronounce it, is kind of making Pokemon Go progressively worse for its users this past week. First, instead of fixing the broken nearby tracking feature for Pokemon around you, it simply removed it. And because the nearby tracking feature was broken or hard to use, a lot of third-party tracking services popped up, such as PokeVision, PokeHound, and PokeNotify, which Niantic finds to be the devil, apparently, because they've now been cut off by Niantic. But aside from that, those services were apparently making a ton of Pokemon Go accounts and running Android emulators to gather their data, which, as you can imagine, made a lot of extra work for Niantic servers. So hopefully you'll have a much more reliable experience now as you wander around aimlessly trying to catch something other than Pidgeys.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Apparently the campus here thinks, the campus security here thinks Pokemon Go is the devil itself.
Not really.
They're very against Pokemon Go. We had a security training talk and they're like,
yeah.
They're like, whenever you download an app, be sure to look at what permissions it takes. For instance, Pokemon Go needs this, 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 this. It's like, you're basically sending everything about yourself at every second.
I know. A few people have raised that with me as well, and I'm kind of like, well, I'm not playing it, so it doesn't really bother me. But I can see people's concern, particularly people who aren't that familiar with tech, who are kind of worried about the whole, you know, they're sending all this information to Google or whatever for the maps side of things, which I don't even know if Niantic is doing that, but that's what the other game that it came out of was doing. So anyway, who knows? I guess we'll find out in due course what's happening with all the location data. If any of our listeners already know, feel free to hit us up in the Slack. In other news, anyone can now go get a HoloLens. Originally, the Microsoft Mixed Reality product was only available to developers after going through a very careful application process. But now, even you can go order up to 5 HoloLens development kits, provided you have a cool $3,000 for each of them. Ooh. No news on a consumer edition yet.
Okay, so this is still the developer edition that's being released.
Yeah, I think that's what... Yeah, sounds like it. And that's quite a price tag. Although, maybe it's not. What do you think? Is that sort of in the ballpark of what you expected?
I mean, that's quite a bit if you compare it to the other, the 3 virtual reality devices. I mean, I guess this is definitely doing something different than virtual reality, but I can't imagine it being that much more expensive. So, I'm sure what a consumer one will be released, especially if they're trying to get this to be the next big thing for customers, then... They know that $3,000 isn't going to get the get consumers a good amount of consumer percentage to buy it.
Yes, that is true. And that is something I guess I'll have to monitor and work out as time goes on exactly how they're going to price that. But it does seem pretty expensive at the moment. And if you want to hear us talk more about virtual reality, augmented reality, and mixed reality, head on over to our podcast feed and check out episode 1, where we did a lengthy discussion on those technologies. Google and Dashlane are working together on creating an open source API for accessing passwords in password managers called OpenYOLO, short for You Only Log In Once. It should make it easier for app developers to access passwords stored in password managers, which should make it easier for you to log in to anything on your phone. Up until now, there's been no universal implementation of this. OpenYOLO will first be targeting apps on Android, but the goal is to end up going across all operating systems. And Google and Dashlane aren't going this alone. Other password managers that are either already participating or have expressed strong interest include 1Password, LastPass, Keeper, and KeePass.
Cool. I guess they're hoping to get more and more people into password managers.
Yeah, which, you know, again, the better the security, the better for everyone, hopefully.
That is the most annoying part of password managers is every time on the phone having to log in again.
Yeah, yeah.
At least on LastPass. It does say you can stay logged in, but... That would kind of defeat the purpose if anybody got your phone. They can get all your passwords.
Yeah, on iPhone or something, could you not have to do, like, I'm wondering if they could request your fingerprint or something like they do when you're unlocking the phone as like an authentication to use your password, because that's essentially what it is anyway.
Yeah, so like LastPass has a fingerprint.
Yeah, recognition the same as iOS.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so for Android, I guess it would either be fingerprint or whatever else they do. They do that thing where you have to draw your pattern on the screen or something.
Mm-hmm.
You could do the same sort of thing. Anyway, leverage the existing login feature rather than making people type something out. But
yeah, makes sense.
Who knows? Anyway, that's all the tech you should know this week. If we left out something you think we should have mentioned, feel free to email us at ask@techreformation.com. For more tech you should know throughout the week, follow us on Twitter @TechReformation.
Now let's move into Tech You Should Use, part of the show where we recommend a tech that has been helpful for us in hopes that it will be helpful to you. So this week I wanted to recommend something called Spot Hero, and this is something that Michelle and I just stumbled on while we were in Chicago. We wanted to go to the Navy Pier, and that is a very crowded area, and we didn't know where to park. And so we're just like, man, parking in Navy Pier, and that didn't help much. And I thought, surely there's an app for this somewhere. And so I started looking up parking apps and found Spot Hero. So what Spot Hero is, it's just you download it and it pulls up a map and it shows you a ton of parking lots all over, or you give it a location. It shows you all the parking lots near there and how much they cost. And what's even better about the cost is if you go to that site's website or wherever, it would say how much it costs. Maybe you call them. The cost is way more than what Spot Hero gets it for. So where we ended up parking, it would have cost $44, and it cost us $18. So not only does it help you find a close spot nearby, it also saves you money on it. And before we knew about this, we were in St. Louis, and we ended up parking probably a mile away from the place we wanted to go. And whenever we got to where we wanted to go, there was a parking lot literally right next to it for maybe $10 cheaper. So that was why we decided, let's try and find a better way to do this. So if you're taking a trip and you're in your car, I highly recommend Spot Hero. It was great for finding locations for us.
I wonder if it works universally, like whether it's a US-only thing, or I always have to ask this question because I'm not in the US. And I guess I can just go to the Australian App Store and see if it will let me download it. I also wonder, does it tell you parking spaces on major roads, like or you know, city streets or something, like paid parking on the side of the road? Okay, so it's only actual car park.
Yeah, I think it's just lots.
Okay, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is probably, I guess, what most people are searching for anyway. But that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
They should combine that. They should add into that the tech that already exists in other apps where you GPS mark your car location so that you don't forget where you parked within a car parking space. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, there's a few apps you can get where you can say, I'm on level 3, row 2 or whatever, and you just drop a pin and then it makes sure that you get back to that exact spot.
Mm-hmm.
If they put that into Spot Hero as well, then it's a pretty full-featured parking app. I can't think of anything else you need other than to be able to, you know, get out of the car and press a button, have it automatically reverse parallel into the space that you can't get into or something.
That'd be an intense app. It takes over your car.
Yeah.
Once we get to
self-driving cars, who knows, that could be the next, you know, part of Spot Hero. But it looks like, for all you non-American people, or at least Australian listeners, it looks like it's not showing up for me in the Australian App Store. So,
bummer.
Bit of a bummer. Maybe we should just move to America.
Yep, that'd be good.
Well, we'll talk more about that in Theology from the Headlines.
That was a great segue.
No, that's cool. I would definitely try it out if I was there. If you are in the US and you have a use for something like this, check it out and let us know how you went, whether it was useful for you or whether or not you have a different solution that you use for finding the best parking spaces and getting the best value for money.
And that's a wrap on Tech You Should Use.
This week's episode of the Tech Reformation Podcast is brought to you by listeners just like you. We love bringing you this podcast each week, and we're super thankful for the support of our listeners, whether by subscribing, reviewing, recommending, or jumping into the Slack team. If you enjoy this podcast, we'd love to hear from you in the listener feedback channel on Slack, and we'd really appreciate it if you could consider whether you might be able to donate to help us keep the podcast going. We try to keep costs to a minimum on the show, but there are some costs associated with producing it each week. So if you're able to help us in this area, please click the sponsor link in the show notes or head to our website at techreformation.com and click the donate button next to any of the episodes. This podcast exists for listeners like you, so grab your USBs and ESVs and join us each week on the Tech Reformation.
Theology Mixer Radio is a podcast designed to bring church life and theological thought to the front of the line as hosts Scott McCauzy and Jeremy Lundmark interview guests from all stripes on the most challenging topics of our day. On Theology Mixer Radio, you'll find an open forum where we discuss and debate Christian ideas and biblical interpretations. I'm Scott McCauzy, host of the Christian Devotion Speak Up Show.
And I'm Jeremy Lundmark, host of After the Sermon. Together, we'd like to invite you to join us once a month as we toss theological ideas into the blender, puree controversial guests, and grind up moral dilemmas in an effort to encourage, challenge, and strengthen one another in our walks with Christ. Also, we hope to expose you to the theological ideas and passions of the many dedicated authors at TheologyMix.com.
It's time to get in the mix!
So that brings us into Theology from the Headlines, where we talk about different tech topics and how they relate to our Christian life. And so this week, as Craig hinted at, we're going to be talking about refugees. So people fleeing from countries without parking apps.
Oh, I laughed at that and then instantly felt guilty because it's such a serious issue.
Yeah.
People fleeing from countries.
Yeah. So, well, what kind of inspired this one is a guy came. He is in Athens, Greece right now, working with refugees and just doing church plants on the refugee highway, which is, he has some really crazy stories from that, just how because of the transient nature of the refugees and how they're constantly moving and switching countries, like, you may see someone come to Christ, and then you teach him to read the Bible, and then he's in a completely different country. But yeah, he had some awesome stories, and he gave us this great visual on a website that shows the flow of refugees into Europe. So it's called Lucify, and it's in the show notes. So, I mean, really, if you want to, I would highly recommend watching it before we continue the discussion, just so you can have a visual as we continue to discuss the refugees. But if you don't, that's all right. I'll explain it briefly. So on Lucify, there's this map that shows all of Europe and then North Africa and then the Middle East and Russia, and it shows these white lights going into different European countries. And each white light that moves is 25 people. And so by the end, you see it stream from 2012 to 2016. And like in late 2015, it's just pure bright lights flowing all over the world. Into Germany gets the most. It gets up to like 1 million refugees. And Serbia gets a ton. France gets a ton.
Wow.
And these are people that are coming from Syria, of course, but then Iran and Saudi Arabia and all the Northern African countries and all the Middle Eastern countries. And so one of the things that stuck with me about this guy said is he showed this map and he showed all the white lights coming in to Europe. And he said, that's the nations coming into places where we can reach them. And if you just think about that, like these are places that Christians can't get into, or it's really hard to get into. And if they do get into, you have to be very careful with how you share the gospel in fear of getting kicked out. Or if you work with a local believer, them getting thrown in prison and killed. But they're going into places where we can talk freely. We can go and just share the gospel on the street and nobody's going to kick us out of the country. And more than that, these people are in a place where we can serve them and love them and show the love of Christ. But anyway, have you checked out the map, Craig?
Yeah, I did have a look at it before the episode, and I also looked at the cost of displacement, which is another part of the website, which I don't know if you want to talk about that later. Yeah, there's a couple of links on the homepage. In terms of the flow, I guess the speed is something that I wasn't aware of. I was already aware that Europe had a refugee crisis, obviously, and heaps of people were going to places like England and Germany. But, yeah, just to see all the white dots getting quicker and quicker over the last 10, 15 years, to the point where it's almost just like you said, like a massive white sort of flooding into that area. And it seems to be from fairly consistent countries as well, like fairly consistent areas, which is also a sad thing that there are those places that, you know, seem to be having trouble so often or for such an extended period of time. I did find it quite full on, and I'm glad we're talking about this actually, because it's something that, just I guess on a side note, Australia has dealt with over the last, again, same period of time, I guess 10 to 15 years, where we've had people trying to come over in boats from a whole range of different countries, Iraq and places like that, and often they get to Indonesia and then they try and get from Indonesia to Australia, and that's the bit where their boats start falling apart and people, you know, plenty of times people have drowned and all this kind of thing. Other times Australian customs boats have picked them up and taken them to an island. But basically the Australian government then assesses them, but what happens is a lot of them get put in these things called detention centres, which are essentially like, we don't know if you're a genuine refugee yet or not, so while we're assessing you, we'll put you in a prison type thing, like a, you know, you get a bunk and you're fenced off and you can't go and be free in the place that you've come to. And that can be up, that can be for years, like, you know, that could be for 5 years or something that you're there, I think. And so for me as a Christian, this is an issue that, and I know we're not just going to be talking about refugees in general, we're going to look at the tech side of it, but it is something that I struggle with, because on the one hand, I feel like we're called to be concerned about for the sake of the refugee. You know, we're called to, the Bible talks quite a few times about aliens, and it's not talking about ET, it's talking about people who are displaced, who are not in their home land or home area. And so we are called to care for those people often. But then on the other hand, there's the thing of, you know, sort of telling them to come or welcoming them and saying, yeah, come on in. If they're still going to try and get there by such dangerous means, like a boat on the open ocean, that's a little tiny wooden boat, that's like a rowboat or something on the open ocean, and heaps of them are going to die. That's not very ethical either to encourage that. So it's a really hard issue. And I'm sure it's hard for these European countries because their population density is so much higher than ours is in Australia. Probably because Australia is so dang far away from everything else. but yeah, it is definitely full on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting thing you mentioned of like the Bible talking about taking care of refugees. And that was, God said that to the Israelites because you guys were refugees in Egypt for 400 years. And that's just as true for us because we're alien and exiles on earth because that's right. Our true home. So yeah, both Old Testament and New Testament people were able to relate to these refugees.
Yeah.
So yeah, on the tech side of this, I just kind of was researching a little bit about what is technology doing in these places. One of the first articles I found, it matched one of the things that the missionary had to say. He said that every refugee has a cell phone. If you can count on one thing for them to have, they're going to have a cell phone. Because I guess, apparently they're just somewhat cheap to get. And all the developing countries, they just kind of skipped the landline stage and went straight to cell phone stage because it's so much cheaper to build.
Yeah.
And really, that is one of the biggest places that that humanitarian aid are able to make a difference. Of course, food and clothing and water and shelter, that's a huge part. But then on the tech side, developing apps and providing ways to get connected and have a way to use those cell phones. And so one of the ways, this is through Mercy Corps, and they made an app working with Google. So one of the things that Mercy Corps said that in partnership with Google, the International Rescue Committee and other colleagues, they've developed a website called refugeeinfo.eu. It's a multilingual website for refugees moving through Europe. And so this provides common milestones on the route, such as registration and asylum processes, emergency contacts, currency details, where to find water, lodging, medical care, and other services. And this is one of the first, or this is the website that pulls up automatically whenever they connect to some of the Wi-Fi hotspots with the partners throughout the region. So that's one really cool way that companies are using technology, is that they provide free Wi-Fi, and then they log on to the Wi-Fi because they see free Wi-Fi hotspot, and it pulls them up to this website that just says, here's all the places you can go, here's where you can get help. I thought that was a really cool instance of using technology to serve people.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's something that, the cost of cell phones being so, relatively inexpensive, and also the ability that we have in a lot of countries to have free Wi-Fi networks around, to leverage that for this purpose is obviously a bit of a no-brainer, but it's good that people are doing it. And it's good that it can be so simple for the people who are probably struggling in so many ways to figure out how to go about life in the situation that they're in. So to anything that can make that easier is great. I think in an upcoming episode, we'll probably talk a little bit more about another initiative that I know of that sort of looks to do the same kind of thing in terms of providing communication methods for people who are struggling with, infrastructure and things like that. Because ultimately, one of the key ways of helping people in, when they're in a position where they don't have access to a lot of material things and things that they can use to help themselves, is to provide them with information and communication. Mm-hmm. And technology is really good at information and communication. That's one of the main things that we use it for. And so I think, this is me speaking personally, I think if we can provide those two things for people, obviously we should also provide them with the gospel, because information and communication shouldn't become idols, but those two, having the ability to access those things where they're at, will, I think, drastically improve people's ability to find help or make sure them and their families are safe and all that kind of thing. So definitely a cool use of technology.
Yeah, that'll be fun to dig into in the future. I think it's awesome how, like, thinking on in the past before cell phones and stuff, just how much more of a logistical nightmare it would be. Those people would show up and just have no idea of what to do. But yeah, with good communication that you're mentioning, there's a lot of awesome ways to help them out. Yeah, and then some other ways that technology has been helping in the refugee crisis is and this is from an article on Europe Newsweek that just lists five different examples. One of them is a roommate matching website for refugees in Germany. So it'll just say like, hey, we need houses, and you can just match up. And there's funding. So like micro lending, just to raise $5,000 and start a small business. If you've heard of micro lending, it's kind of a getting popular, I guess, as a way to help people.
Yep.
A third way is safety. And so this is kind of getting at what you were talking about, Craig, with people on boats, the refugee boats that are breaking down in the open ocean. And so this says to prevent those tragic losses, the Migrant Offshore Aid Station is using some aircraft and drones that are just flying out around the sea searching for people who are in distress. So that's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. And then information, which is what we already talked about. And then lastly, goods. So using Amazon wish lists to guide people to what kind of items need to be bought for refugees, and then people can buy from the wish list and it gets delivered there. So there's a lot of awesome things that people are doing around the world, and I think it's easy for us to think, oh, you know, this is in Europe, we're in Australia or America, or we do have some British listeners for sure, but
yeah,
for some that aren't, it's a lot. Yeah, it's easy for us not to think about what we can do, but it was really cool just to see some of the things that people are doing and realizing, you know, God has given us a gift of tech, and there are so many ways that people are using tech to serve the refugees. And maybe there's some open source ways we can get involved or whatever. We can just be clever with the gifts God has given us to support them. But yeah, one other instance I wanted to mention was, again, from this guy who spoke in Greece. He said that one of the things they do is they carry around a backpack with Wi-Fi hotspots on it, kind of like we were talking about earlier. And what this what the Wi-Fi hotspot does is whenever they log on and bring you to a website that will help somebody, it has the links, kind of like what this mentioned, I think. It may not. I'm not positive. But anyway, it starts you off on a homepage, and that homepage has things like the Jesus film and other ways just to share the gospel with people who log on to the Wi-Fi in their language.
Is that like white American Jesus? Is that Jesus film or a different Jesus film?
Oh, no, the Jesus film that's used for... all around the world.
I just haven't seen it for a long time, and I'm trying to remember if it's like really, really bad or if it's okay.
No, I haven't ever seen it either, but okay. It's like huge. Like if you look at people group lists and the needs of the people group, Jesus film is always on there of like, has work been started in this people group? Is the Jesus film translated in it?
Wow, okay.
Because it's such a huge tool just to... of that broad gospel sharing.
I'm sure a lot of reform guys would say it's a second commandment violation, but anyway, we won't go there.
I don't think it's like this is Jesus. He has blonde hair and that's all it's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know if it has an actor in it. It probably does, but it shares the gospel.
Yeah.
With scripture. So, and it's, yeah, definitely been used all across the world. And so, yeah, he was saying, you know, you set up these hotspots in all the different languages that are likely around you, and you find a big group and just stand there. He said you can pull out your phone and watch people connecting to it and watching the Jesus film and stuff on it. And he's like, yeah, if you're just getting 100 to 200 hits, then you just kind of camp out there for a little while and let people watch. So that was cool.
But, wow.
Yeah, he had a lot of cool stories of what they're doing in sharing the gospel and seeing churches planted and then those people that they share the gospel with and be saved, then moving to places like Austria or Germany, and they're in an apartment complex with a ton of other Pakistanis, and that person who heard the gospel then start sharing with the people in his apartment complex. And he said one time he lost communication from this guy he had been discipling for 10 months. And then finally the guy got a hold of him. And the guy in Austria said, I've seen 15 people come to Christ since I've been here, but we don't know what to do. What do we do now? We've just been reading the Bible together.
So. Nice. So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Really awesome stories, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it's good to, I don't know if you realize this, but I'm always inspired when I talk to you because your heart for the lost comes out so obviously. And I think, more of us need to consider how we can, you know, not all of us necessarily, feel called to overseas missions, although I think I've said before that that's something that we should all definitely be open to, and not reject and maybe even pursue more actively than we do. Because it definitely could be where God's calling us, and often I think we just shut the door without really giving it a second thought. But it is also convicting to consider the alien who or the refugee who comes to our country seeking help. How can we help them? How can we share the gospel with them? And how can we provide for them? We have talked about the fact that all through the Bible it does mention the fact that there are people who are in that situation. And it's only by the grace of God, I guess, that us Westerners in our Western countries with our comforts and whatever have what we have. It's not anything to do with us that we somehow earned living in a safe place or not having to deal with fleeing for our lives or, you know, getting away from massive political unrest or war or anything. So I think it's definitely something that we all need to consider. How can we personally, not just what stance can we take on refugees, but how can we practically as Christians get involved in helping refugees, in welcoming them, but also in sharing a message that they may not have heard before, which is the gospel, and then, like you said, discipling them so that they can hopefully disciple others. Because, yeah, it is almost like a lot of them are heading to countries with quite a bit of Christianity, you know, like England and Germany and places like this have had churches for hundreds and hundreds of years. And they're not necessarily super Christian nations these days because of secularism and whatever, but the gospel is definitely still present in a lot of those countries. So anything we can do to spread that amongst people who are coming in, and also, yeah, give them, I guess, the two things, you know, Jesus talks about. If you say if you call me Lord, Lord, but you don't take in the stranger and clothe the naked person and give them something to drink, then, like, it's that whole thing of, you know, if faith without works is dead. If you say one thing but you don't do anything about it, then do you really believe it? And so, yeah, pretty convicting, I think, and something worth thinking about. How can we respond and care for the refugees and the aliens in our local situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think it's easy for us to think like, oh, but I don't know. So that was talking on the point of there's people in our countries. You said they made it to Australia, and we know that some are making it to the United States, and obviously they're making it to Europe. But there's people probably in our cities that are refugees, and we just think, I don't know, again, what can I do for them? But one story I heard on the Voice of the Martyrs podcast, talking about Iranians, there was a guy who went to a wedding. He and his wife went to a wedding and came back to find that his house had been taken over by the government, and he wasn't going to be allowed to get into his house. He couldn't get any of his stuff. So he's in, like, his wedding clothes, and now that's all his family owns. And so they're traveling in their wedding clothes and trying to get somewhere safe. And so it's like, if you think, imagine yourself in a position like that, what would you want someone to do for you?
Pretty yeah, much anything. Yeah.
Just that's a right. Friendly ear to talk to. Like one of that, again, the guy.
A change of clothes, maybe.
Yep. But the guy that spoke, he said, you know, one of the most healing things you can do for them is say, what's your story? And then just listen to them. And he said, it's, you need to be prepared to hear the tragedy that you're going to hear from their story, but it's really healing to them just to have someone who cares enough to listen. But yeah, also food, drink, and shelter is a very helpful thing to provide as well. So yeah, I think that's a great message from what all the things that you pointed out from the word of what Jesus says about serving those in need.
Hey, Tank, have you got any recos this week?
I have kind of a strange reco. It's not a reco of anything other than Google. but whenever you're using a new app or using a new product, whenever you're signing up for whatever or buying it, and it says, insert a promo code, just pull up Google and say, app promo code, and then use the first one. Because, for instance, Spot Hero, that's what I did. It said promo code, and I've never done this, but I was like, I wonder if I can find a promo code for Spot Hero. I just Googled it, and I think it was first spot was the promo code. And put that in and save 10%. I'm like, sweet. And nice. Then I did it again on some other app. Just found a promo code online, used it, and saved more money. So, yeah, if you've never used an app before, just Google the promo code and save some money. So that's my reco.
Cool. I recommend this week, because we've had a child recently, my wife and I, I think I said a couple of weeks ago that I went with a friend of mine. He took me secondhand book shopping, and we were looking at kids' books and stuff like that, because there's some really good stories out there and puzzle books and things that kind of challenging but interesting for kids to do. And he homeschools his kids, so he kind of knew which ones were educational and going to be helpful and stuff. So this is going to be a pretty random reco, but I'm going to recommend a series of books that I read growing up called My Life As. So I think my favorite one was number 7, which was My Life as a Human Hockey Puck. But there was My Life as Alien Monster Bait and all these crazy titles. I used to love those books. I found one in one of the secondhand bookshops, and I was like, I have to get this because this is number 1 and I'm pretty sure I don't have it. And I came home and I had number 2 through 16, but not number 1. So I'm glad I bought that.
That series sounds really familiar.
They're Christian books by a Christian author, the guy who did McGee and Me, and maybe Adventures in Odyssey or something like that. Was he involved in something else? I can't remember his other thing that he did. Bill Myers was the author. Some Christian books are really, really corny in terms of how they convey the Christian message. I can't remember in detail about, they're probably pretty Arminian and all that kind of thing, but I can't remember them being super corny. So I think at least for that age bracket, they were quite entertaining and still presented a really good message. So check those out.
Yeah, I completely forgot those existed, but I'm pretty positive I read one as well. I remember he gets eaten and then he like explores the body. So, yeah, I enjoyed them too. So, I second that reco.
Cool. Very good. And if you would like to contact us, you can connect with us in our Slack, which is slack.techreformation.com. There are heaps of people in there these days, so definitely jump on in and sign up to a bunch of channels that interest you. And we'd love to talk to you there and hear your thoughts and talk more about the episode this week as well.
You can also check out our website. It has all of our past episodes on there. It is organized by tags. And so you can, see if you want to see a certain topic, you can find where we talk about it.
We are also part of the Theology Mix Network. You can check out their website or their master feed on iTunes, and the links for those are in the show notes. As always, we'd love it if you could review us on iTunes. iTunes reviews really help other people to find the podcast because it pushes up our podcast in the overall rankings. So definitely appreciative of those, and we'll try and read some out on air if we get them. And also recommend us on Overcast. Star our episodes in Pocket Casts. Whatever you need to do to get us recommended in your podcast catcher of choice, we would appreciate it. And that would be great. Our music, the music that you're hearing right now, is used by special permission of Matthew Parker. He's pretty awesome. Check him out on SoundCloud and iTunes. We are very grateful to him for his music. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. We go to the ends of the earth.